The restaurant was empty, several of the lamps guttering. Nobody else had come by Mom's place since Ryan and company had arrived. Ryan felt comfortably relaxed and full. His right hand brushed against the butt of the Sig Sauer. The Styrus SG-70 hunting rifle stood upright against his chair. During dinner, he had tried to pump their proprietress about the Children of the Rock, but she had changed the subject, claiming she could smell something burning back in the kitchen and disappearing from the questions. Now, as she returned with their dessert, he found her a tad more forthcoming. After they had devoured the last of the sweet pastries, they all joined Doc in steaming mugs of coffee sub, served with plenty of cream and a large bowl of unrefined sugar. Mom leaned on the bar counter with her own coffee sub, and before long, Ryan had her talking.
Children of the Rock been around here for almost as long as I can recall. Started real small. Brother Joshua Wolf came with a couple of shootists, half a dozen women, some hunting hounds. Now there must be close on 100 of them. But that's only a guess. They got a reasonable mix there now, with a few more men than women, but hardly any kids. Of course, I haven't been there myself. Well, not for years, anyway. Fortified Ville. Big buildings. They say they got electrics there. Power mill and shock fencing. Oh, and plenty of weapons, too. They're at war with the local Apaches. They're always on the lookout for recruits to their way of life. As you might have noticed, they are seriously religious. But they leave me alone, and I leave them alone. I just take care not to upset any of them who pass by. Well, it's getting dark. Won't be any travelers passing through now. Guess I'll be closing up soon.
You ever get troubled by muty rats?
Do I, Outlander? I surely do. Biggest sons of bitches I ever saw. They reckon that it's one of the results of the old rat hotspots nearby, among the big trees.
Ryan and JB both glanced automatically at the small lapel rad counters they wore, noticing that both were showing somewhere between the orange and yellow. They were some little distance away from the safety of green, but an equal distance from the imminent danger of red. Mrs. Fairchild carried on, seeming oblivious to their rad counters.
They come for miles after the offcuts from the butchering we do here.
Can't you poison them, or just chill them with blasters? I never saw such mean, sickly bastards in all my life.
They just keep coming. I think they got some kind of underground nest out in the forest. Wouldn't want to be the one that stumbled on a place like that. Anyway, you folk like some more coffee, sub?
Doc, Dean, and Jack raised a hand at the invitation.
You three going to share a room together tonight?
Dean and Jack nodded as the woman poured out the hot black bitter liquid from a blue enameled pot. Doc smiled up at the woman. Ryan watched and realized that the old man was entertaining lecherous thoughts. Mrs. Fairchild looked like she could have eaten Doc up for supper and spit out the bones, but there was no accounting for taste.
I put you three into the end cabin, kind of a few steps away from the main building toward the stream. But there's plenty of bedding. You'll be snug as bugs in rugs. Now drink up. There's good boys.
Oh, dear. I am so sorry, my dear Madam Fairchild. I've spilled some coffee sub onto your table.
Think nothing of it. I'll take care of it, hon. Now, listen up, strangers. Make sure you keep the doors bolted tonight. Windows got armored shutters and locks. Keep them secure. This is a dangerous part of the country, what with the Apaches and all. Also been some trouble with stickies within the last 6 months. Plucked folks out of their sleeping beds with their evil suckered fingers and slobbery mouths. Never a trace of them seen again.
Ryan arose from his chair and stretched.
Don't worry. We've gotten used to looking after ourselves. But we surely thank you for the warning. Old friend of mine used to say that an ounce of warning was worth a ton of regret.
I, too, am ready for bed.
Take one of the lamps from the table there. You'll find candles set by the beds. There's plenty of blankets and extra ones in the closet. Got your own John and washing facilities just off the bedroom. Won't be too much for hot water, but plenty of cold. Come straight from the stream out back.
I'd be interested to see the place you store your jerky.
Mrs. Fairchild's countenance darkened. Mildred was surprised to notice the sudden change.
Why?
No reason. It was just so damn good, I would just have liked to seen the carcasses and the way you dried it, to keep the flavor.
That's a trade secret.
That's fine. Didn't mean to cause you any trouble.
Sure, sure. Sorry I snapped. Just that there's always folks sneaking around trying to find out my secret recipe for the jerky. Get tired of it.
I understand.
good. Real good. Just so long as you do.
Oh, sure. That's fine, lady. Fine.
A small part of Ryan's mind was puzzled by the woman's strange reaction to what had seemed an innocuous question. But his stomach was well filled with the fine food, and he was warm and dry, with the prospect of a decent bed for the night to come. Life was rich and interesting, and he set the minor doubt away. Jack led Doc and Dean into the gloom, along the eastern flank of the main building, to where a narrow path wound out alongside the foaming stream, among the trees. He held one of the stained brass lamps above his head, the yellow flame turning his hair into a tumbled veil of gold. Mrs. Fairchild indicated to Ryan and the others where they were to sleep, pointing to a white-painted door that opened into a narrow hallway.
One room with a double bed on that side, another one might bigger on the other side. And remember what I said about bolts and locks.
Thanks. We'll take breakfast before we leave in the morning.
Sure, sure. Got plenty of eggs and sausages. Running a mite low on jerky. But I feel sure there's some fresh supplies on the way. Y'all sleep well now. Good night.
Ryan and Christy took the smaller room. The shutters were heavy with iron bolts, and Ryan shook them, making sure they were solidly locked.
She kept on about the danger, didn't she?
Yeah. So?
Like she was almost preparing us for something dark happening.
Christy stood by the door, reaching up to slide across the top bolt, looking back over her shoulder, her fiery red hair gleaming in the candle's glow. Ryan sat on the bed and started to unlace his combat boots, but stopped as her doubts communicated themselves to him.
You got a bad feeling about this, lover?
There's something that doesn't set right. The way she's out here on her own, with those muty rats, and the supposedly dangerous Apaches in the neighborhood. I know she seems kind of tough, but...
If she had something planned, then why make such a fuss about warning us?
True. I guess I'm getting paranoid.
She moved over to the other side of the bed, dusting her hand gently over the stained patchwork quilt. Ryan sat, unmoving, thinking.
Now you got me thinking. Still, we've got our blasters, and the room seems double secure. I can't see where any serious danger's gonna come from. Over, under, through, or around, like Trader used to say. All seems safe.
Christy peeled off her white shirt, revealing her magnificent breasts. The nipples were erect, shadowed.
Got the itch, lover?
Seems like I do.
Then let's get to scratching it.
The luminous numerals on Ryan's wrist chron showed it was 17 minutes past 1 in the morning. Outside, he could hear rain beating steadily on the roof of the bedroom. Ryan stretched. At his side, Christy lay sleeping on her back. He was aware of pressure on his bladder, and he considered paying a visit to the bathroom that he knew was just along the passage, past the door of the room where J.B. and Mildred would be sleeping. He considered that perhaps if he lay very still and closed his eye, the feeling would go away. Ryan tried it for several minutes.
Ugh, fire blast.
It was no good. He was going to have to get up, unlock the door, and walk along the passage to take a leak, in the cold and the damp in the middle of the night. He swung his legs from underneath the blankets. After they finished making love, he had gotten partly dressed. Now he had on his underclothes and the blue denim shirt, socks but no boots, and no weapons. He thought about going just as he was. It would take him only a couple of minutes. Then again, there was Christie's unease. If you traveled with someone who had a muty skill at seeing and chose to ignore them, then the blood was likely to be in your own face. Trader used to say that a man who took any chances when he didn't have to is a likely candidate for a 6-foot plot of good earth and no marker. Slowly, Ryan pulled on the dark blue pants and laced up the steel-toed boots. He buckled on his belt and slid the 6-hour from under the pillow into the holster, making sure that the 18-inch steel blade of the Panga was secure in its sheath on the opposite hip. Christy stirred in the bed.
Is it time to get up, lover?
Nah, going for a piss.
That's good. Is it raining?
Yeah, it is.
Sounds cozy. Weird on the roof. Pittering. Pattering.
Christy pulled the blankets up around her neck and once more fell into a deep sleep. Ryan eased back the bolt and cautiously peered out into the corridor, which was almost completely dark. A flash of bright pink chem lightning made him jump, the clap of thunder following hard on its heels. It showed him the empty passage, making him blink at the transition from blackness to brightness to dark again. He could have turned and taken the oil lamp off the rickety table by the head of the bed, using one of the box of self-lights provided by Mrs. Fairchild. But he decided there was no need, and stepped out of the bedroom into the Stygian gloom. The air was cool and moist. As he went past the door of the other bedroom, fingers brushing the wooden walls to keep himself oriented, Ryan heard the sound of someone coughing. Likely J.B., he guessed. It crossed Ryan's mind to wonder whether the cold that Doc was suffering from was going to turn out to be contagious. In Deathlands, if you were healthy, then you were also lucky. Illnesses raged through a bill with virulent effect, ailments that didn't used to be mass killers, things like measles and mumps and pink pox. Ryan's hands found the bathroom door. He pushed it open, expecting to find it creaking, but to his surprise, it gave with the stillness of recently oiled hinges. There was a narrow window of frosted glass. Another flash of lightning revealed a nest of thick metal bars across it.
Go to a lot of trouble to keep out hostiles, but keep people in.
The storm was very close, the lightning coming every few seconds, the rolling thunder making the building quiver. After he'd finished, Ryan hauled himself effortlessly up onto the bars, peering out into the California night. Rain was sheeting from left to right, driven on a strong northerly wind. He could see that even some of the larger branches on the tall pines were moving violently in the storm. He winced at a great jagged fork of lightning that sliced to earth less than a quarter mile from where he watched. Static electricity made his curling hair stand on end, filling the air with a crackling stench of ozone.
Fire blast. This is a storm and a half.
Just as he began to lower himself back to the floor, Ryan's eye was caught by a dark blur of movement at the fringe of the trees, beyond a narrow path that ran along toward the cabin where Dean, Doc, and Jack were sleeping. It was impossible to make out what it was. But the next flash of lightning from the chem storm threw the scene into brilliant, stark pink relief, halting the movement so that Ryan could make out what it was.
Bastard rat!
It was one of the massive, meaty creatures, identical to the ones that they'd run into earlier in the previous day. Except that this one looked even bigger. The body was bloated, the fur clinging sodden to the 5-foot-long body. The leprous tail twitched uneasily behind the muted creature, and the blank golden eyes turned slowly toward the watching man. Common sense told Ryan that the rodent couldn't possibly see him at that distance in that light, but his grip relaxed and he dropped clumsily to the floor of the bathroom. Ryan waited, crouched, steadying his breathing, aware that his heart was beating faster than usual. There was something hideously malevolent about the soaking predator, waiting out in the storm.
Where's that son of a bitch going?
On an impulse, Ryan moved fast out of the bathroom, heading to the main entrance. He hesitated a moment, then retreated to their bedroom. He leaned over Christy and shook her gently awake, his hand pressed over her mouth to stop her from crying out.
Quiet. Just saw one of those muty rats heading toward where Dean, Doc, and Jack are. They caught the bad feeling from you.
He took his hand away, and Christy sat upright. Lightning cracked through a narrow gap at the top of the solid sec shutters, like the slash of a razor-edged knife.
Storm.
Yeah, a bad one. I'm going outside to wreck. As soon as I'm going out the front, slide the bolts across again. You keep safe and get dressed. Wait for me to come back.
How about the others? JB and Mildred?
No point in waking them yet. No need. I just got that feeling. I'll be back in 5 minutes or so.
If you're still out there after 10 minutes, I'm waking them and coming out after you.
Ryan nodded his agreement and bent down, kissing Christy lightly on the cheek, feeling the cool softness of her skin against his lips.
Sure.
The wind nearly whipped the heavy door from his fingers, tugging wildly at it. Ryan held on tight, easing it shut behind him. He stood still and waited to try to accustom his eye to the darkness and the turbulent weather, blinking as yet another dazzling flash of purple-pink chem lightning crackled across the forest, followed by rippling thunder. It felt that Ryan's spine was vibrating in time with the thunder. The muty rat had vanished, which was both good news and bad news. Good if he never saw it again. Bad because he had no idea where the creature might have gone. Ryan drew the Sig Sauer slowly from its holster, thumbing back on the hammer, holding it steady in his right hand alongside his thigh. He started to move cautiously toward the cabin. He kept in close to the protection of the main building of the eatery, past the kitchens, where he caught the lingering scent of the marvelous jerky. He paused at the end of the block, gathering a breath as he readied himself for the dash into the open, checking once more that none of the meaty rats were anywhere around. The rain-swept clearing seemed empty of life.
Ryan, old boy, you need to turn the fuck around and go straight back to the warmth and comfort of your nice dry bed. Everything's fine. Dean, Doc, and Jack are snug as bugs in a rug. Almost certain of it. Almost.
Ryan took a deep breath and moved into the torrential downpour, which soaked him through to the skin in seconds. Ryan didn't make the mistake of trying to run, head down. That way you could easily bump into something profoundly unpleasant and not ever know what it was that had laid you out in the dirt, hot blood gushing from your severed arteries. Also, the footing was desperately treacherous, with slimy streams of dark mud mingling with the leaf mold at the edge of the trees. Ryan brushed rain from his good eye, flicked back his wet hair, and tried to keep a good watch all around as he closed in on the dark cabin. He reached the door. The iron handle was cold to his fingers and resisted any movement. Ryan waited a moment, then tried again, using greater force. Nothing happened. It was rock solid. He looked around as another great flash of sheet lightning illuminated the rain-slick slope. He thought he caught a glimpse of fresh movement, a shadow along a narrow path that he hadn't noticed before, a path that led past the cabin down toward the stream, flanking what had probably once been a car parking area. On an impulse, he followed the movement.
Ah, fire blast!
Then he saw it again, illuminated in the lightning flash. It was definitely one of the rats, scuttling along about 30 yards in front of him, belly down, scaled tail scooping through the mud. The trail wound steeply downhill. Ryan could make out faint ruts in the screaming dirt, as though some sort of barrow or handcart had been frequently used on the path. There had been no lightning for several long beats of the heart, and Ryan reluctantly stopped, waiting to gather his bearings again in the swooping blackness. If the rat had stopped as well, there was a very real danger of walking right into it, with predictably unpleasant consequences. To Ryan's surprise, the ragged veil of clouds was suddenly torn apart for a moment, and watery moonlight broke through, showing that he was on the edge of a wide clearing. Ryan's mind registered two separate and bizarre images, almost simultaneously. One with the rat, silhouetted by the stark light, cowering on its hind legs, clambering and gnawing away at a mound that stood up against a roof-high deadfall. The other, seen in that frozen fragment of time, like a fly trapped in amber, was what the rodent was eating. Holy shit. There were bones, glistening, stripped of meat, with just a few shreds of gristle and sinew dangling from them. A small mountain of death was piled high, the smell penetrating Ryan's nostrils, despite the wind and the rain. That first hideous glance also revealed the presence of dozens of flayed carcasses, all too obviously the source of Mrs. Fairchild's wonderful jerky. It was the next flash of chem lightning, a triple heartbeat later, that showed Ryan precisely what kind of meat he and the others had devoured so enthusiastically. There were femurs and clusters of carpal bones, entire rib cages and pelvises, but most of all, there were dozens of grinning skulls. Human skulls. Suddenly aware of its watcher, the meaty rat turned from its feast and dropped to all four legs. The few seconds of moonlight were over, the wind blowing the banks of clouds back, plunging the area into total darkness again, with only the scattered bolts of pinkish silver lightning to bring any illumination. Ryan moved a few steps to his right, feeling with his hand to encounter the rough, streaming bark of the nearest of the immense pines. He knew the importance of having solid cover to make a stand against the muty rodent, and pressed his back against the trunk, the Sig Sauer probing at the blackness like an extension of his right arm. Part of his torn attention was locked into the dilemma of the rat, but the other part was wrestling with concern over the grotesque hill of human corpses, and what the implications were for himself and the six friends. It took an enormous effort of will for Ryan to shut off the thought of what he'd eaten with such delight. It wasn't a good moment to give in to the nausea and double over, puking. Not with the rat on the move. Lightning flashed, a massive display, longer and brighter than any that had gone before. Thunder making the centuries-old conifer at his back tremble to its ringed core. He briefly saw the meaty rat coming slowly toward him, its head moving from side to side, the silver light reflected from the cold, gold eyes. Its mouth was half open, drooling a thick, yellowish blue. I noticed that the thing still held a severed limb in its strong jaws, a fleshless arm with bony fingers. Then the chem lightning dimmed, and all was darkness. Ryan steadied his right wrist with his left hand, aiming the blaster at where he thought the rodent was. It was a strong wish to cut and run, to get away from the horror that he was creeping stealthily toward him. But it would be a doubly bad move to expose his vulnerable back to the monster, and risk running pell-mell into some of its brothers or sisters. Ryan stood his ground, ignoring the clubbing wind and the driving rain, ignoring his own utter discomfort, and the worries about his friends. The light showed the rat in mid-charge, its movements twitching, and the strobing flashes barely a dozen paces from him.
Damn you!
Ryan felt the kick of the pistol run up his arm, clear to the shoulder. The first one ripped into the side of the rat's questing muzzle. The second drilled into the throat as the rat lifted its head in agony from the impact of the first 9mm round. The third round was superfluous. The grossly mutated red cancerous animal was already dying, its legs folding under it, the tail flailing like a demented buggy whip. It lurched as the final round hit it through the right shoulder, toppling it onto its side, dropping its interrupted meal. Sable blood oozed from its parted jaws.
Bastard.
Ryan looked around to see if there were any other giant rats anywhere close by. The clearing was completely deserted. Just the wind, the rain, the lightning, and the mortally wounded creature barely twitching. Pressing his gun to his cold forehead, taking several slow deep breaths to try to control the sickness that washed over him. He kept seeing a vision of the jerky sitting there on the plate, nestled in its bed of potatoes and vegetables, soaked in that rich, luscious gravy, and Mom's smiling, sweating face hovering over the plate.
Oh, fireflies. Ugh.